Welcome back to episode 35 of A People's Guide to Publishing, where we have a special guest this week. Head of Group, is that your title?
Yeah, Head of Group.
Mm-hmm. And so what Curtis does is sort of a mysterious yet vital part of the publishing book world. And oftentimes, you know, we hear this myth or this trope that, like, if you have a good book, whatever that might be, that it will just sell itself. But what actually goes on is largely behind the scenes.
Fundamentally, I'm I provide messaging and connection between the publisher, the creatives who are creating books, and announcing books and imagining books, and the people who are going to retail them and present them to the public, the ultimate customer who's going to pay the retail price for that book. So my job is to interpret, to share information, to give sometimes a state of the publisher, to give a sense of like what they're excited about, what they've accomplished at this point in their story. I know Microcosm, you're now celebrating since it's 23 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is almost as long as I've been a publisher sales rep.
We'll be 24 in February.
Okay,
so.
Yeah, we're very close. Yeah. We're about a year apart, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, we're almost the same age, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
So can you tell us like how you do this? Like, what are the actual steps?
The number one step is the meeting with the publisher. They are doing all their work, of course, which is they've signed their contracts and they have a manuscript and they're developing it. The point at which the sales rep comes in is to basically receive a presentation from the publisher that is going to give us the language, the visuals, and the specifications of the book that we can then share with our retailers so that they can decide if that book is right for their customers in turn. The first thing is usually a sales conference. That sales conference can take place in person or via web, sometimes phone, and we learn about the publisher's list. Mm-hmm. And the list are the new books that that publisher is going to produce the following season. And the seasons correspond with the calendar, the natural seasons, but also depending on the publishers, they can be tweaked a little bit. For most publishers, there are three seasons. There's spring, fall, and then sort of a winter, smaller season for a lot of people, right? So, when it comes to commission reps and with independent publishers, they tend to have a spring, summer, and then a fall, winter. And then we learn about those books and discuss them with our publishers. Sometimes we have discussions about covers, which is an easy thing to have an opinion about, but a difficult thing to get right.
Yes.
And we're very aware of that. As I am, you say that I'm head of group. I am. I manage a group called Book Travelers West of reps that has been around since 1951. This group has never bought or sold. It's sort of unusual that way, but it's kind of more of a co-op. And the leadership falls to whoever the group elects to be the next leader. That is me for the last almost 12 years.
Wow.
So I've been the head of group for 12 years, and one day I'll pass it on to somebody else.
When is election year?
Either they decide that they need a change.
Okay. So is that annual?
It's a little more like parliament.
Okay. UK.
It's like they announce an election.
When they revolt.
Yeah, we don't have it on a calendar.
It's like a vote of dissatisfaction.
No confidence. No confidence vote, and then they all decide. So, and there are not a lot of us. There are four of us.
Right.
So, and I'm one of them. So there are three people but we work together and we're independent contractors and we take care of everything that way. But that's as commission reps. So, when I talk about that, going to that sales conference, because we are commissioned reps, which means we take a small percentage of every sale minus returns, when we're having that meeting, each publisher is an independent company that we have an individual agreement with. So right now we have about 24 different publishing and entities and other companies, like we do Theo Chocolate, we have a map maker and some other things that aren't doing strictly books.
Yeah.
But our core business is books. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to that season, we are learning about the front list books from a publisher. And then once we have gathered that information and the publisher agrees on what it's all going to look like, often the publisher produces a print catalog with those details, mm-hmm. About the size of the book, cover of the book, the trim, the page count, details on the author and what they're trying to do, contents, description of the contents of the book. Often a physical catalog is produced, but also there's an online catalog called Edelweiss, mm-hmm. that is a sort of a shared platform where I can write down my personal notes that are directed directly to my buyers, so they know that it's in my voice that I'm speaking to them about this book.
Yeah.
Though we are often sharing notes too, because as sort of a little bit of a hive mind, we're all trying to get to the truth of a book, and we want to sell a book as honestly as possible.
Yeah,
sometimes
true.
It's selling, and we have to figure out what those merits are that we didn't even notice before.
Yeah.
You know? That's why a lot of times in publishing you say, why does that book sell so well? I don't get it.
Well, yes. We've had that. Mm-hmm.
It's probably not for us, unless mm-hmm. you haven't read it, and then you read it and you're like, oh, I understand now. Once we have that information, we have the printed catalog, we have the Edelweiss catalog, online catalog, then we have scheduled appointments with our retailers, and in our case, it's almost exclusively independent booksellers, some smaller chain booksellers that are also independent. We have museum stores. Anybody that has 50% or more books is generally the way that we look at it. And we sit down and we have meetings with them, and we arrive at what kind of quantities they would like to order from the publisher. And those bookstores then place an order with us that we then submit to the publisher. The publisher then, on their schedule, ships those books at a wholesale discount, so there's enough margin to make a profit on a retail sale, keeping everyone in business.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope.
That's an awesome explanation. So we've been really happy working with you since January 1st mm-hmm. as publisher clients. We mm-hmm. were buying books from you, from the other publishers you mm-hmm. represent mm-hmm. for long before that, which is
for
how we met you.
Mm-hmm.
And before we worked with you, we worked with Ingram, which is like the biggest. Is it the biggest? It's kind of like the one only.
Some information is privatized, but it is likely to be.
Yeah.
I mean, what is your opinion? Like, is Penguin Random House Publisher Services a larger distributor than the IPS conglomeration?
That's an interesting question, because there is, because of the difficulty of getting those books from the warehouse to the retailer and the many kinds of retailers, there is a tendency for smaller publishers to join and join forces in distribution agreements
yep.
to make that part easier, so they can focus on the creative side and the marketing side
yep.
instead
mm-hmm.
of the fulfillment side, which is a business of very slim margins, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good question. PRH is Penguin Random House, which not so long ago was Penguin Putnam and Random House.
Oh, yep.
But those two have actually merged now. So there's merger after merger. We find some of our smaller publishers are approached by large publishers for distribution agreements because
yep.
they have the machinery, mm-hmm. they have the systems to deliver books efficiently. If a publisher is doing something well, then Penguin Random House or Ingram Publisher Services or Quarto Publishing or Workman Publishing also has just added a distribution client, because they feel like it's a nice pairing of one publisher with another. So who's biggest, I wouldn't know, because
right.
you have two things with IPS. You have the distribution side, and then you have the wholesale side.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, one of the biggest wholesalers stopped wholesaling in general, and that's Baker & Taylor Publisher, Baker mm-hmm. & Taylor Wholesale, stopped that side, and they became a distribution client.
Right.
They became a distribution outfit.
Yep.
Right. So now
publisher
they
services,
are.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just picked up McSweeney's, for instance, and they are now working with McSweeney's to bill and ship them.
Nice right. work, Mark Zuckmel.
So yeah.
I want to back it up a little bit for our listeners and viewers who are either running small presses or thinking about it and trying to figure out exactly, wow, how would I sell these books? How would mm-hmm. I get them to readers and then to bookstores? And then so at the beginning of this year, we made a choice. We had the choice between continuing to work with a large distributor that was like a company that employed reps like yourself,
mm-hmm.
but we kind of sent them our data and they did everything. Mm-hmm. And our choice was to become self-distributed, where instead of working with that big company, we instead directly decided to work with you and a mm-hmm. number of other people who work like you mm-hmm. in order to get our books into stores. And I was wondering, like, what's your advice for other publishers who are trying to make this decision of what kind of distribution they should seek down the line or in the
immediate future? That is such an interesting question, because it's a seriously challenging one. I look at my world as I have two bosses. I have the contracted publishers. I want to please them, and I want to support them and help them grow. Mm-hmm. And I have the retailers, booksellers, museum stores. I want them to thrive also. And in between, we get excited about books.
Yeah.
You know, we get excited uh-huh. about imagining those books in the store and finding the right customers. Mm-hmm. There are obstacles to making that happen.
Sure.
How do you get that book in that store?
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe one of the most sort of, it's a little bit sad, I was just approached by somebody I knew years ago who was a bookseller, and she went with a sort of a self-published outfit.
Mm-hmm.
She told me that she has this book, and she's saying, how can you help me?
Oh.
Right.
But it's already out.
Mm-hmm.
There's no announcement to it. There is no sort of build up to the release.
Yeah.
My email back to her was, I think that you should go through Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association and probably try to put an ad with them mm-hmm. or let people know, but then they have to know where to get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm coming back around to this, like, how do I get it? How do I acquire that book at a margin?
Mm-hmm.
Because we work off of discount, of course, discount off of a set retail.
Mm-hmm.
How can I work with that margin and still be in business? And that's one of the biggest challenges.
Sure.
So when it comes to, you know, our challenges as reps, depending on the size of publisher and the demands of the viability of the books at retail, or the perception of the viability, because that's always a problem too.
Yeah.
Do your buyers understand what you're doing?
Yeah.
Does the retail buyer have the market for what you are doing as a publisher?
Right.
Right? And what we are finding, of course, with Microcosm is that people are thrilled to have a direct relationship with you, and which is sort of mediated through me to a certain degree, but it's also supported by in-house people like Katrine and others. The challenge with going to being solo versus distribution is a few things. The viability of writing a purchase order for a buyer, knowing that they are going to have and this is an additional invoice that they're going to have to keep track of and pay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they are also going to have to look at whether or not, if that book, they take a chance of that book and it does not sell for them,
mm-hmm.
if they're buying that forever and are never really going to be able to viably return it, returns are one of the least favorite things for both publishers and retailers.
Sure.
Retailers, they need it to stay in business, and of course, you know, publishers don't like it either.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, how much more business can you do by giving up some control to a larger entity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're looking at your day-to-day sales, you're not writing, you know, people aren't writing purchase orders for you because it's too small a part of their business.
And so this is the fascinating thing. So mm-hmm. when we returned to self-distributing, I think it had been about 10 years since we had done it previously, our goal was to not lose any ground, was to basically maintain the amount we had sold through PGW, Publishers Group West.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, we were immediately up 64%. You know, and it was, you know, and you know, at first I was like, okay, this might be like a fluke. This might just not sustain over the year, but it's actually going up
mm-hmm.
as we go through the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I had just so many questions, you know, right away that I was like, how is this possible? You know, because there were just so many factors that seemed like, how could we, like a dozen scrappy nerds, like, do this better than a corporation that does this professionally for all, you know, decades.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it really came down to like economics of scale, like you were saying, like, but it's the opposite scale, whereby being smaller, the only thing to really overcome. And I had a phone conversation with Mark Zuckerman where he was like, most publishers could not do what you do. And I think he meant it in the sense of like getting a purchase order written for just your own books without the benefit of the distributor's catalog. You know, and I think that is something, you know, that's something that I always respected so much in Workman, is that like there's a coherence
mm-hmm.
in the catalog.
Mm-hmm.
There's a coherence in the Chronicle catalog. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at it, it doesn't even matter like what your subject or topical interest is. Like you would always find more than three books,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially as a buyer.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other thing was that going, you know, we met with so many buyers that they were like, I've been trying to order your books from PGW and we're not getting the books.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that's never something you should want to hear, you know. And so
they were placing orders that weren't shipping?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, and you know, we have the same kind of issue,
mm-hmm.
you know, where as a buyer, as a customer, you know, we'll order something and it shows up months later.
Right.
You know, and you never, you know. And again, I get it. It's like they have, you know, such a larger set of fulfillment systems and warehouse and like obstacles to overcome, you know.
Certainly. And you also do a lot of domestic printing.
Yep.
You know, you've always made a point of that.
Mm-hmm.
For publishers who are doing a lot of color in their books, it's really difficult, and they're trying to find alternatives with Trump's tariffs.
Right.
It is extremely expensive to publish in China, but often they still need to print
yeah.
in China
yeah.
and publish in the U.S. So it is that's changing pricing. I think one of the things that is you know, you're being such iconoclasts and knowing your market and testing your market and welcoming feedback from your market is a big, you know, part of what makes Microcosm attractive. Also your price points. You are looking at a book, you're looking at a zine,
right,
and saying, is this the right price for this? Do people think this is fair? When it comes to a distribution company, you know, you're giving up a lot of your margin in order to, you know, pay for that fulfillment. And for some people, that is perfectly, really worth it, right?
Sure.
But when you are publishing as much as you are, and at as small a margins as it would, the margin itself, the percentages don't matter. After a certain point, they're pennies sometimes that they can't, a distribution company is very difficult for them to make that work. So
yeah.
they're probably going to look at your books and say, well, we'll do everything that has a perfect binding.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there's that too.
And then they don't want to look at anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, a lot of our store's businesses are now increasingly in very sort of to the point, your zine world. And people, I'm even finding, even after the last 9 months, I'm finding that people are starting to shift more and more and understanding the power of that.
Yeah.
And I like stories like you are a great and...
You are a great and
powerful
wizard.
Mm-hmm. Great and powerful wizard, which we're now going to be selling in a perfect bound book that was tested over some time as a zine, and you
mm-hmm.
saw the enthusiasm and there was feedback, and then you made even a better book, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know your market so well,
yeah.
right? And also... We went through a period, you know, as we started,
mm-hmm.
we started at a certain minimum for an order. And after about 3 months, our feedback to you was, people aren't prepared to start.
Yep.
Right? They're mm-hmm. not prepared to start an order. Can I say it?
Sure.
24 units?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you looked at it and you said, well, I always say, I don't want a publisher to do anything they can't live with.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I would much rather see really good standard terms that you can expect day in and day out than the occasional crazy special.
Yeah.
Because if you do a very deep discounted crazy special, it makes retailers question, like, where is the value?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
if you can do that,
right.
then why wouldn't you do that every day?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
It's like retailers will remember, as often you know customers do of anything, mm-hmm. remember the best deal they ever got.
Sure. Oh, right? Yeah, you do.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's like a friend of mine, we talked about that. I said, and then basically they'll always bring that back to me, but I remember this deal. And you know, I remember when January of 2017 and you do this. They'll remember the best thing they ever got, and they'll remember the worst thing you ever did or the
right.
biggest error you ever made.
So what do you look for when you are prospecting a publisher?
Critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
Critical mass meaning publishing enough every season that there's enough that is new and interesting that is going to feed the all-important backlist. I still don't like that term. I like to call it available books,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Bestsellers.
Bestsellers. Well, some of them are bestsellers. That's the other thing. Some are bestsellers and some won't be, right? We have
right.
to find out what that is, too. But
they don't tend to stay in print if they're not bestsellers.
Exactly. They don't. That's right. They have to sell enough,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially now, it's very difficult to keep books in print if they're not selling well. So, yeah, I'm looking for a critical mass up front that then feeds an exciting story about books that work, i.e. resell,
yeah.
and that are working for my customers.
Yeah.
You know, so that's important. I have to have a story to tell, right?
Mm-hmm.
My story is, because as a rep, I'm going from store to store, the other element of what I do is I share shareable information,
yep.
right? Shareable information is, this store is doing quite well with this book.
Mm-hmm.
We are getting good things about it. People had an event with this author, they loved this author. This author made the audience feel like that evening was worth it. That was a good way to spend their time.
Yep.
And I feel like that's, spending time with this book is a good way to spend your time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all about just being honest about it, you know, regarding, you know, your customers' experiences with books.
Mm-hmm.
That may change. You know, we right. all have seen books that did really well 20 years ago, and interesting how it belonged to a time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But we're all on that sort of leading edge of time, and what are the books that work right now? The Body Keeps the Score, for instance,
yeah.
is such a powerful book right now.
Mm-hmm.
It is saying something about what we all need to be thinking about and talking about,
mm-hmm. yep.
as far as our body, memory, sensitivities, humanity to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, books that sort of help understand that, like Unf Your Intimacy,
mm-hmm.
or you know, and Unf Your Brain, of course. You know,
and those books really body.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it is. It is. Oh, that's great.
And she has new stuff that's not in The Body Keeps the Score because it's
yeah.
newer research, and she is of that sort of, you know, doctorate kind of thinking.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. Yeah, because we were like, oh, the world's not ready yet, and then when we saw that book was like doing as well as it is, we were like, oh, the world is ready now.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can
and,
do
and
it.
That book is like 5 years old too, so
oh,
it's
yeah.
coming back up. Yeah,
yeah.
Dr. Harper, obviously, and is also the thing about an author being right is she's authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She is not just being put on the case like, oh, we think you could write this book.
Yeah.
She wants to write this book.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that she thinks about every day.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
she does know a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And people really, but then you're also creating a package.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say package, a book, a bound book.
Yeah.
That feels like it offers a lot. Like,
yeah.
what makes a publisher worth it for me us to take on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how often we think we can order and reorder. And this is a big one. And a little publisher, a little children's publisher named Tiger Tales was just bought by PRH.
Yep.
And so they're going away. There
yeah.
were customers who really loved those books.
Sure.
They had a 10-unit minimum
mm-hmm.
for free freight, and they'd go again and again and again. We'd get a lot of orders from them because people could reorder them no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Most accounts could. Some accounts couldn't. I mean,
oh.
and so their main problem was not the initial order, it's the reorder.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's why you, over the course of this year, have looked at the realities, even if it's just the way they think, to
mm-hmm.
think about the way that these retailers are thinking.
Yep.
And you've made it easy enough. They shouldn't have to think too hard about placing an order.
Mm.
Sure.
Right?
Yep. Yep.
And because they don't think too hard about it, they're shooting the orders on how to resist Amazon and why. Because we have a 10-unit minimum now that
mm-hmm.
and free shipping is, I know, difficult, but it's also building interest in your publishing program in general.
Yep. We opened, I think we're up to like 50 new accounts from that
really?
Title alone.
Yeah.
If not more than that. And we sold 2,500 in the first week, you know, of a drop-in title.
Yeah.
You know, it came out of nowhere, and it was really, you know, and that is all like 20, 10 at a time. Mm-hmm. Some store orders 5, you know, mm-hmm. which is great. But that was another one where, like, and I feel like, not to pat ourselves on the back, but it's like something that most publishers just would not touch.
I mean, it's a $4 zine.
Yeah, also that.
Yeah, your net, the sales on it, like what people actually end up profiting on that is, you know, there's the margins are there.
Yeah.
But it takes a certain kind of dedication to want to turn a book of that price. Mm-hmm. But I think they love the messaging. They want, this is the perfect nexus of an idea that people want to share
mm-hmm.
at a price that they can do it without a lot of thought. And I know that there are stores that will start giving it away. I mean, it's going to be something that, especially on first Indie First Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I already have people talking about if, you know, they're going to sell some. They're really looking at that November 14th date.
Yep.
Because as long as they have it a few days before mm-hmm. Thanksgiving and then first, you know, Indie First Saturday is that following Saturday, mm-hmm. then they are going to make something of that and make a point of it. Because in my feeling about being a sales rep, I used to be more in the sort of the art side. Mm-hmm. But I found really interesting about being as a publisher sales rep, I love being a facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
If I can help, it's in my nature.
Uh-huh.
We all have different...
Uh-huh. Sure.
I the nature of, like, if I can help a little bit and then sort of, like, watch that go, it's... I love it. I get really excited about that. And so most retailers, on some level, bookstores are a lot of things. They're entertainment, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
Sure, politically driven, sometimes politically sort of basically ecumenical in a lot of ways. I mean, they try to be often because you want to have a lot of arguments in the store and, like, have discussions and everything else. It's a special thing that the United States has.
Yeah.
And a lot of places, too, but the fact that there's so much enthusiasm to have independent bookstores or a gift store that mm-hmm. has a selection, or, and I call it gift, or just an indie store that is serving a population, making them think a certain way and providing them things that they need. I just think that just excites me. I don't desire to have my own store, but I love to facilitate.
Right.
I thought about it before, but I would have to have a real good partner because my weaknesses would need to be balanced out by somebody who had real mm-hmm. talents in another area.
Sure.
And I don't quite have that, so who knows? Who knows? One day, maybe that'll be another phase. You never know.
Got it.
That is, you know, the ability to reorder, to keep those books in stock, and then to have it be, and I'm speaking for independent bookstores,
sure,
to feel like it's a satisfying relationship.
Yeah.
Because in the end, like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we share stories all day, and we love to see books, but we also see the commerce part is really important. And I think that sometimes we throw out that capitalism is bad. I think that we human beings trade, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
They trade things. Have many of my friendships, somebody just brought up to me, said, you seem to, are these people at a trade show, when we were seeing all the booksellers, said, are these people all your friends? I'm like, well, they become my friends.
You have relationships. Yeah.
They're relationships. Because they know that when I walk in the door, I'm probably going to have an ask,
yeah. uh-huh.
but it's not going to be unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that if they say no, it's not a big deal.
Right.
But it's mutual respect. And my main goal is to be welcomed back in that store because I have to keep going back. My relationships are 23 years now in those stores.
Right.
If you talk about how I got here, grew up in Montana, went to school at University of Montana, English and Spanish. I traveled quite a bit. I was in Spain for a while. Started as a gift wrapper in 1989, 30 years ago at Elliott Bay Book Company.
Wrapping.
Gift wrapping.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. In November. Before that, I worked for Washburg. I took a tickets, I gave plasma, I did a lot of stuff. I didn't know anybody in Seattle. I moved out from Montana, went west, and just, like, started.
And you wrapped gifts.
I wrapped books at Elliott Bay Book Company back when it was in Pioneer Square.
Oh, mm-hmm. wow.
And mm-hmm. I met Rick Simonson at that time,
yep.
and who is still there and mm-hmm. has been since
73. Mm-hmm.
And I really developed some good relationships there. I was, for a lot of people, they look at a bookstore experience as almost like a secondary, another kind of education, a graduate level education.
Mm-hmm.
It can be exciting, it can be frustrating, it can be motivating also to do something else. Like, yeah. I've taken what I've learned and I need to go somewhere else. What I needed to do, because I was very angry at Reagan and the Contra War, is I drove down to San Diego, sold my car, and went into Central America. I made my way down to Nicaragua.
Oh, wow.
Through, and it's a contact with El Centro de la Raza.
Oh,
in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I worked as ESL.
Right.
I wasn't formally trained, but I taught English as a second language. I did some translation work, did some interpreting, and lived in San Carlos in southern Nicaragua, Solon Tsunami, Ernesto Cardenal territory.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. And Honduras, and worked in an orphanage and went back and forth about a year and a half.
Wow.
And then I called from Panama. I called Elliott Bay and said, do I still have a job?
And they were like, who's this?
They said, no, they said, come on back.
I'm assuming you did not come on as head of group.
No, because I went back. See, I went back to Elliott Bay and to vote for Clinton, basically,
right.
in
right.
92. So
okay.
I was back
Got
in fall it. Of 92, worked with Rick Simonson in the event series, and I was introducing one, sometimes two authors a day, 4 days a week.
Wow.
And because we had a lot of, Rick Simonson just has a stellar events series.
Yeah.
And at that time, we really had a lot of events down there in that basement, I was there. Until I got a commission rep job in 97.
And what made you switch to commission rep? Because it seems like, it's funny, people come into the publishing and book world and the romantic jobs are editor or bookseller.
But
there's so much else that happens, and like getting people who are interested in sales and marketing is really hard. But it seems like that's something that you're perfectly suited to. Like, did you find that naturally, or did...
I had to learn. I couldn't. So to really go back, my ex-wife was the rep, mm-hmm. the sales rep as a corporate rep for Viking Penguin at the time.
Oh, okay.
And so what happened was she was approached as offered a commission rep position with a group called Nancy Subin Associates out of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I'm not interested, but you should talk to my husband.
Mm.
And so I thought this sounded great for me. I sounded like something I was really ready for. Although the social aspect of it, I really had to grow into. I'm an introvert, and people would never guess. They don't guess it.
They
would never guess it, but I like my people.
Uh-huh.
And once I get to know people and sort of get into it, it's fine, but I panic over every meeting.
Oh.
You know, every meeting, no matter who. I've learned. I've done some behavioral therapy to get there more, to say, no, you're excited about this.
Yeah.
And I did that today, but I've come a long way, but it is exciting. I always love meeting with you.
It can be both, you know.
Yeah, it can be a little bit of nervousness, but also mostly excitement. And because the first, when I accompanied her for one of the trade shows, I couldn't leave my hotel room.
Oh, wow.
I was just not, I didn't know what to do. I had to, you know, it's one of those things where you can cut all this, but this, trying to anticipate every eventuality instead of just letting things happen and dealing with what happens.
Yep.
And so.
But you really made it work. And
I have.
Was that through it seems like your job allows a lot of socializing, but it also gives you a real structure.
It's kind of perfect for me because I love being on the road for a week and then coming back and working in my home office and seeing people locally for a week. It is a nice combination for me. And I also like being independent. There was a point back in the 90s, my ex-wife, Beth Branco, she would get frustrated because corporate told her that she couldn't see certain stores because they didn't bill enough.
Interesting.
And because they needed, they just had to they had to set a level. I guess I sort of understand. I understand.
Yeah.
But the thing, the nature of the commission work is that no one tells me who to see and when to see them.
Right.
Or why I should see them, or whether I can see them on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Or if I can see, a store that's very small and that all their business is going to Ingram, to a wholesaler and not direct to me. That is kind of a line. I probably need to write direct business to have a meeting. And the schedules for all the publishers are so wide. I have publishers, you folks are ready real early, but I have people who are ready to sell spring on October 1, and others who aren't ready because I do university presses too, that aren't ready until like the 10th of January.
Oh, wow.
Right.
That is a big spread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm here seeing a lot of accounts now, but as my son is in college now and I can sort of hit the road more, I love seeing accounts, I love seeing stores, I love sort of pollinating that way and sharing with other stores what is happening at the last store.
Yeah.
Maybe, and saying hello for them. And because most independent stores are very supportive of each other.
Sure.
They try to be supportive. It's harder if you're right, like in the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's it can be difficult, and I completely understand. Because ultimately, we're trying to win customers and do trade and be profitable, pay the bills, and have a good life.
Yep.
You know, and that and all of those things are so valuable. I love that what it takes to get there, right? And the enthusiasm that people who love to read and love to share and actually can make that it's beautiful. And there are also heartbreaking stories when it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Certain towns, Haines, Alaska, needs a bookstore. Oh, I think they're about to get one. They're about to get one. But they changed hands. There was a couple who knew their business really well.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they knew their business very well at a place and time.
Yeah.
Right? And the time keeps changing. The time that we seem to be experiencing right now is one in which there's room and an awareness that local commerce matters.
Yeah.
Where you put your dollar and where it ends up. Mm-hmm. Really matters, and this is just an extension of the trade, the idea that we are human beings who like to trade.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I like being part of that. I like facilitating that. That's what I am. I'm a facilitator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've seen the same where, like, we used to very aggressively advertise and market our store, and, like, we could not get sales to inch one iota, and then it was literally, like, the minute we stopped, that was when people started walking in and spending money.
That is so interesting. Mm. I find that people love to be part of the story.
Yes.
If they can tell a story and share it with someone else, I'm always more interested in how ultimately customers talk to each other about a book.
Yeah.
Yep.
If they have no skin in the game,
mm-hmm.
except that their true feelings about something are going to be shared with somebody they care about. It's bigger mm-hmm. than just the sale. The sale matters,
mm-hmm.
but it is bigger than the sale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think Microcosm in particular, you have you're not just one point of view, you have many points of view.
Mm-hmm.
I love the music angle. This mm-hmm. Miami bass thing is fascinating. What a fascinating thing to
yes.
to think about. I love being able to think about that a little bit. You know, it's like that because there are, and sort of the openness about you know, who we are as human beings, that we're self-defining all the time, and that's exciting, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that our self-definition needs to also be respectful of other people choosing to do what they're doing. And so I think, you know, that's one of the reasons I love bookstores too, because they're creating safe places for people to have those discussions. Not all of the same, and that's also part of the beauty of it and the puzzle of it. That's why I'm not interested in, you know, the chain store phenomenon. You know, they're always big chain stores, if they're sort of open-minded, realize they need to have more autonomy on the customer engagement level.
Yep.
But it's very hard to motivate that if it isn't really your business.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You know? And so they try, mm-hmm. and they can try to reward. And some people do it better than others, but part of the most difficult thing is it's about who you are, what makes you who you are in that community and in that space, in that moment. How mm-hmm. much autonomy and agency do you have?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
This has been the People's Guide to Publishing podcast.
Episode 35.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, 35.
I'm like the archivist of the podcast.
This Joe Beal is also the artistic publisher
yes.
and our podcast host. And this has been Curtis Lowe, who mm-hmm. is the head of group for Book Travelers West and Independent.
Publisher Salesforce.
Publisher Salesforce.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ellie. Thank you, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. All right. Thanks for watching and listening.
Visit us at microcosmpublishing.com.
You can find us on the internet at microcosmpublishing.com or microcosm.pub if you want to keep it short and simple. You can also find us on Twitter at microcosm, on Facebook at microcosmpublishing, on Instagram at microcosm_pub, and here in Portland on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.